When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Trump-endorsed MAGA extremist Bernie Moreno says he wants to move Ohio forward. He wants to make America great again. For whom? For people of color? For black people? Nah. Moreno is just looking out for himself and his white supremacist MAGA buddies. He doesn't believe in multicultural America and equality for all. Moreno was not for us and will never look out for us. We must re-elect Sherrod Brown, who's a champion for our community and all Ohioans. Vote for Sherrod Brown, November 5th.
Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Buy rates plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
It is John Pollock and Brandon Thurston here with another edition of the show. We're back, your third show of Pollock and Thurston in the past week. And we are T-minus 6 days until, in a very civil fashion, Americans will go to their polling stations, mark down their candidate, and then accept the results. And
many of them already have.
Many have. There's been a lot of advanced voting. I will not say that we will not get into any politics on this particular episode. We might, not by our choice. They're making us, okay? It wasn't our choice.
But yes, I heard Hulk Hogan, pollster Terry Bollea, had some comments this week. Is that true?
I don't see no stinking Nazis in here. I don't see no stinking domestic terrorists in here. The only thing I see in here are a bunch of hard-working men and women that are real Americans, brother. You know, when I hear my president and our president, Donald Trump, speak, he sounds for real, brother. He sounds like he has a heart of gold that's all for the USA. But when I hear Kamala speak, it sounds like a script from Hollywood with a really, really bad actress.
That Terry Jean Bollea speaking, referring to Jim Harris, who was Kamala,
yes,
not the presidential candidate Kamala, that is running for president.
Yes. I heard he was saying that the polls are not accurate too, that it's obviously Trump is way ahead and they're not, it's not a dead heat as it appears to be.
Well, they have a secret weapon in Hulk Hogan because the man is traveling the country peddling his all-American beer. So he is, right, he is interacting with,
which is like a poll in itself.
Exactly. Everyday Americans. And he doesn't believe the polls because anecdotally, he runs into a lot of Trump supporters. So you know what, Nate Silver, eat it. Okay. Hulk Hogan, he knows, from state, there are no swing states up for grabs here. This is, it's too big to rig.
Yeah. It's going to be a landslide, or, and if it's not, that's how you know it's not real.
Yeah. So we have, what are all of our representation? We had Dana White at the Madison Square Garden rally.
He was there too.
With Hulk.
This was like the RNC sequel.
This was the, this was like the horror remake. We had, you know, everything represented on stage throughout these 5 hours at Madison Square Garden. And yes, Mick Foley has now come out. He is vociferously campaigning for Kamala Harris, coming at odds with his longtime rival, The Undertaker, who is supporting Donald, yes, Trump. So trying to keep track of all of these professional wrestling / MMA endorsements.
Yes. Yes, we haven't heard from Vince or well, Linda is involved, of course, with the transition team as well.
That is very accurate. I mean, this kind of transitions to our follow up from last week with the Ring Boy lawsuit, and of course, Linda McMahon named as one of the defendants. How would you assess the coverage since we last spoke, Brandon, in terms of in comparison to when the Janelle Grant lawsuit what was filed to this one here? Certainly within wrestling media, I think this was a pretty prominent story, and this was definitely covered beyond just wrestling media. In terms of television coverage, I didn't see much. I know like Law and Crime did a segment on it, but I think that's YouTube.
Is that
only.
Television?
Yeah, I think that's YouTube only. So I wouldn't say like this had the gravitas of the Janelle Grant lawsuit or you know any of like Vince McMahon's resignations.
Yeah,
for instance.
I saw it get digital coverage with major outlets. So like CBS News and so forth had articles about it.
Yeah, and that seems to be the where it is at this point. You know, Lee Cole, I thought, did a really fascinating story or a fascinating show, I should say, with Tom Cole, with both of their sister and their nephew. Because in a lot of this, you know, Tom Cole is only known through this one particular story. And in mm-hmm. this, you got a much better sense of Tom Cole, his upbringing, a lot of the problems that he had growing up and issues he had over the last number of years as well. Like humanizing somebody that is sort of just a name to many people and just known as a ring boy that was the victim of abuse.
Right. I didn't know until you mentioned it in your update that he was even supportive of Linda in her political campaigns in the early 2010s. That was new to me. So there's kind of a relationship from Tom of, you know, that at least with Linda, there was some sort of amicability there.
Yeah. I mean, when like back in, I think this was the campaign in 2010 when, you know, this scandal was being revisited because of Linda McMahon's candidacy, and Tom Cole was, I guess, contacted and, you know, he voiced his support for Linda McMahon. At that time. And I mean, that was one of the aspects to this was, you know, the fact that he had this very, very checkered history with the McMahons and by extension WWE, but did publicly support Linda McMahon during that particular campaign. And after that, I don't even know if Tom Cole spoke publicly after that. I think that might have been the last kind of public focus on Tom Cole, because I don't recall him doing any interviews after that, at least nothing on the record.
Right. So we don't know what his opinion would have been at the end of his life.
So that is about all there. I do encourage people to go back if you want to hear our interview with Greg Gutzler from last week. He is the attorney representing the five John Does in the case against Vince and Linda McMahon and WWE. And we also had a story from Brandon that included a statement from Jessica Taub Rosenberg, who is the representative for Vince McMahon. Nothing from WWE or TKO, who have not spoken publicly about this in any form or fashion yet. And obviously, they will have to respond to this complaint, but that is probably the only time we are going to hear them address this unless put into a position to ask a question about it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if I'm in the Grant lawsuit. WWE has its attorneys. Vince has his attorneys. Laurinaitis has his attorney. It'll be interesting to see if Vince and Linda have the same attorney or if they do have separate attorneys. I would lean towards expecting them to have separate attorneys because they seem to be living separate lives. But there's one issue, though, that we can discuss here is that there's – so this law in Maryland that's allowing – it's a new law that's allowing plaintiffs to file civil suits against defendants for – not only child sex abuse, but negligence that led to child sex abuse. And that's a new law, and that's being tested right now in the Maryland Supreme Court. So, you know, something that we might see is that law tested, and then we might see the case stayed pending the decision that the court makes there, because it's really important that the venue that we have here in Maryland for the plaintiffs stays the venue that it is, because there is a federal law that's similar to this, but I don't think it covers negligence.
No. And it's been interesting because over the last week, it really like caught up on like the Peter Nygaard case, because I thought it's, you know, there's obviously parallels, not the least of which is the same attorney that represented right. all of the Jane Does in that case, and the extent to which these, like in New York, the ability they have, like down to if you received an email in New York, it gives New York jurisdiction. Now that's in the case of, you know, criminal charges being laid, but it really does outline why you hear so many of these cases that are prosecuted in New York and the far-reaching abilities that they have there, beyond just if your business is set up there or there's any you know, allegations of abuse that occur there, but as well, it's even electronic transferring of emails that could be received in New York, and all of a sudden New York has jurisdiction over that.
Right. So it'll be it maybe something that we see is a move to change venue, but maybe even, you know, the put this case on stay pending that decision. And then if there's a favorable decision that favors the defendants, that might be what you see.
Let's also bring up this question, because it was one that was brought up, is in terms of any WWE or TKO officials being asked about this. Next week is the quarterly earnings call. I would be stunned if this was brought up in that kind of a setting. Yeah, it just will not be. Not. It's not of, like, at best we'll have it, you know, mentioned in the filings of, you know, something just disclosing it, but it's not going to be brought up in that setting.
The job of stock analysts, just like the job of wrestling media, is to be supportive of the company, to be friends, to really, you know, drive shareholder interests here.
Of course, yes. Make sure you meet those quarterly expectations. So let's not hold our breath for this to be addressed in that setting. So if we're looking at the next opportunity, is I don't foresee a press conference happening in Saudi Arabia this weekend. I would not expect that to be happening. No. So
there is a post show scheduled, though.
There is a post show scheduled.
You're right. And a kickoff.
So,
but we've never seen a press conference before.
So if we are to believe there will be no press conference there, then you're looking at Survivor Series in Vancouver on November the 30th. And the response I received from more than one person was, it's not fair to bring this up to Paul Levesque, who was not part of this company when the scandal went, when it took place. And it's not a fair question to be asking Paul Levesque in that scenario at a press conference. He is not the person to be asked about this. What would your thought be on that? Is that a valid reason to withhold asking Paul Levesque?
I think. Why is it not fair? Because people are trying to be entertained there. This is a kayfabe press conference, and other members of the media are asking questions that fit into a kayfabe setting. Actually, I don't see why a question about a lawsuit wouldn't. Oh, and because it's a legal issue, they can't comment on anything legally. Here's what I would say is that I'm not expecting a WWE executive to say anything about a particular lawsuit and their response to a lawsuit. I'm sure their lawyers will handle that. But there are questions when you add up not only the Ring Boy lawsuit, which I know Paul Levesque, you were not there. You've only been with the company since 1995. Nick Khan, you've only been with the company since 2020. Nonetheless, considering the investigation that your board did in 2022, considering all the details that we've learned from, well, that are alleged in the Janelle Grant lawsuit and the details that are alleged in this Ring Boy lawsuit, what are you doing to make sure that things like this don't happen in the future? That's not even an adversarial question. That's not a question that's attacking anyone. It's a carefully phrased question that a good executive who's good at handling these types of situations could respond to in a way that is actually positive for WWE. But because so few people are willing to ask those questions, we seem like assholes for even asking them. It's an opportunity for WWE to send a good message. Now, Paul Levesque has had opportunities like this in the past too, but he hasn't risen to the occasion, to say the least. It doesn't have to be an adversarial question at all. It can be a good thing for WWE to respond to questions like this.
I think there's a big difference between an uncomfortable subject matter versus a like oppositional painting that person asking that question as being in opposition to you. I think what many have looked at is the fact that WWE could very much project a positive light on themselves in this situation if handled with care and being delicate around this situation without just ignoring it either. But I think that there is a... The fact is, Paul Levesque is the person put in this situation. It's viewed by many as a kayfabe press conference, but who has deemed it that? That's never how it's been accepted by people that attend these press conferences. But I'm not going to go down the whole rabbit hole of the press conference dichotomy. But in the absence of WWE putting forth any other representatives of this company, Paul Levesque is the front-facing executive that
it would be more appropriate to ask these questions to Ari Emanuel, to Mark Shapiro, to Nick Khan. But you know what? They're not there. They're not at the press conferences. I've never been at a press conference where any of those three people have been taking questions. And Paul Levesque is the number two executive in the company. I'm not necessarily saying that we need to ask questions like this to talent, but to the number two executive, sure, why not?
I'll also add, the bar for coming off well is so exceptionally low. Like I'm telling you that basically Paul Levesque has to clear the, I haven't had time to read the lawsuit. Like that's kind of, if you can be a step above that, it would be considered a win.
I think Cody has handled these questions really well.
Yeah. And Cody is not violating.
He's a former EVP. Okay.
Like it's just like, to me, I still think this year, in terms of WWE representatives in these kinds of situations, like Shawn Michaels to me came off incredibly well right after the Janelle Grant suit. And he was asked, if you want to call Paul Levesque's questions adversarial, I mean, what Shawn Michaels was asked in that conference call a week later was 10 times more like right into his own like rumored discretions that he did deny being asked to him. And he handled them with grace. He handled them with a level of empathy that you don't typically get in these kinds of settings. And he was applauded for the way he handled these. I think there's an inherent value to just not necessarily having to be as open as everyone would like them to be, but meeting people to just a fraction of the way there of, this is horrific. This is why this would never occur under this administration. And we sympathize with these John Does that have carried this for decades, that we want to find the end result as much as they do and find some amicable resolution to all of this without needing to dissect this case and go into a legal strategy.
And again, if that's not the time or place, then the alternative is nothing. These are the only times that we have to ask a question. And if they don't want questions like that, and this is not WWE ever, well, WWE did not pick me for a question on the most recent press conference I was at. They didn't let you in to a couple of press conferences where you were otherwise given access to be in the press box. So maybe there is a little bit of lever pulling on their part.
You and I are one person now.
Yeah, sure, why not? It's the name of the show. But there's been no direct, no explicit admonishing of us for any questions that we've ever asked.
None. No, I can't state that I have ever had that, nor any restriction to ask. And I think it's more so, it would be something looked upon. But a month from now, I mean, will this still be a story that is in the wrestling zeitgeist that will be front and center for people to have an interest to ask about? We will see. Want to also discuss a story that came out on Tuesday from Mike Johnson at PWInsider.com, reporting that Vince McMahon is at least in the planning phases of his next act in entertainment, to launch a entertainment hub company that would focus on producing and financing TV and film projects in the fiction and non-fictionalized genre, and things of that nature, I'm sure. The report goes on to state that it's rumored that former company executives Brad Blum, who was also, as reported by us for Front Office Sports, he was corporate officer number two in the Janelle Grant lawsuit, that he would be involved with this, as would Kristen Prouty, who served as an SVP as their Hollywood liaison and had been at the company for 19 years before being let go, or for leaving the company earlier this year amid cuts after the merger. Brad Blum also leaving the company earlier this year after two stints with the company, which coincided with Vince McMahon's retirement and unretirement when he came back.
Yes, no, and I know Mike Johnson did spell out, he does not know if Kevin Dunn is involved in this. No indication that he is yet, which we're all thinking of now, of who are the Vince allies who have left the company recently, and Kevin Dunn would be one. I suppose in some sense, John Laurinaitis would be one, except for the couple weeks there where he was opposed to Vince and described himself as a victim of Vince as well before going back on that.
And representatives for Vince McMahon have not responded to our inquiries regarding this story and some follow-up questions that we had. If we do receive any response, we will certainly convey those. But, I mean, on the surface here, this like Vince McMahon is 79 years old, and there is a certain level of, I'm sure, angst on his part to resume his career. This is a classic workaholic that everyone would ascribe as one of his key characteristics, but comes at a time when he is mired in a federal investigation, an ongoing civil suit that's on stay for another 5-6 weeks, and how viable launching a company is going to be for someone that is surrounded by all of this scandal, and if he will be able to get something off the ground. Maybe you can also give an idea, Brandon, of how much he has liquidated over the last 18 months in terms of what he has in terms of startup capital that's right at his fingertips.
Over $1 billion, I believe, he liquidated from the closing of the merger through April of this year. So he's got a lot of cash, and there's a lot of money, but there's also, you know, I think what happened with Slim Jim in January is an indicator of how much brands are going to be eager to work with him, or are going to be eager to avoid working with him. It's a problem to be associated with brands that are associated with things like allegations of sexual misconduct.
All right, we are going to flip over to the other big announcement this week, and that came on Tuesday from WWE. They are launching their WWE ID program. So we're going to go first to the press release that was issued by WWE, and pulling it up here. And WWE ID. Under the program, WWE is going to provide prominent independent wrestling schools with the WWE ID official designation, with the goal of providing new trainees and existing talent at these select institutions with enhanced development opportunities, listing Booker T's Reality of Wrestling out of Houston, Cody Rhodes' Nightmare Factory in Atlanta, Seth Rollins' Black and Brave Academy in Davenport, Iowa, Elite Pro Wrestling Training Center in Concord, New Hampshire, and the Knox Pro Wrestling Academy in Los Angeles as the first WWE ID independent wrestling schools. Additionally, the WWE ID will identify top independent wrestling prospects with an official WWE ID prospect designation and support their developmental journey by providing financial opportunity and assisting with training, mentorship, and development, including access to world-class facilities, best-in-class ring training, athletic trainers, and more. WWE ID will give fans the opportunity to follow the paths of these standout prospects on the independent wrestling scene through curated behind-the-scenes content, as well as highlights and matches showcased across WWE's social platforms. A big initiative here by WWE that has apparently been in the works for quite some time. And I know, Brandon, you have done a lot of digging and have found new details about this that goes beyond just what was released by the company on Tuesday.
Yeah. So I've talked to some people who are aware of how this program is working. And so we've learned here, and you'll notice here in the press release, they're only mentioning schools. Now you could look to Reality of Wrestling, Booker T's, school, which is also a promotion, but at this point they're only working with schools. not yet working with promotions. I've been informed that there is no financial support even yet going to these schools, but multiple sources have informed me that there are some independent wrestlers already who are under contracts related to this program, and we haven't been able to identify yet who those wrestlers are, but it has been confirmed to us by multiple sources that there are indie wrestlers who are taking indie bookings, and they're quietly at this point under deals. I think it is possible that we'll see in the future, we'll see some announcements about who is under a deal related to this program. But one source who's close to the program informed us that there are currently no restrictions on these indie wrestlers to work for what promotions they can't work for or whether they can lose. And this would naturally raise the question, well, can they even work for AEW? And I think if this does become public that, you know, these wrestlers here are under deals, developmental deals, then I would expect that AEW will just avoid them and they'll end up not being booked.
It seems like one of those situations where does it even need to be spelled out in a deal? Like if you are attached to one of these contracts, are you willing to just take a extra work for AEW for one night? I mean, where it becomes interesting would be if AEW had interest in you and what is going to be the scale of which these WWE ID prospects are being paid. And if AEW wants to, hey, you create some buzz around yourself, we're willing to offer you a 3-year deal at X amount above what you're making. Do you have that ability, or will you be locked to a deal that forbids you from signing a contract elsewhere?
Right. We'll see what we're able to learn once people who are under these deals are even identified. But one motivating factor, I believe, here is that this program will help them reduce their antitrust risk, which is something that I think this company and this parent company, TKO, are very conscious of, given MLW sued WWE last year. The lawsuit was settled at the end of the year for $20 million. And UFC's in a lot tougher situation with their two antitrust lawsuits. One of them's got a preliminary approval for $375 million. The Kung Lee case, the Johnson case, is still being worked on. So I'm sure this is something that TKO is being very conscious of. They do not want to become a target for antitrust litigation, whether that's civil lawsuits from other businesses or even the federal government. This is pretty clear that this is something that has happened now as part of new leadership taking over WWE. This is not something you would have seen in the Vince McMahon era. But I'm told that, you know, Paul Levesque is very supportive of this idea and Nick Khan is in favor of the strategy.
I'm sure Vince McMahon had an IWTV login. I'm sure he was tuning into, you know, GCW on a biweekly basis. You don't think he had his finger on that pulse?
No, I don't think he was watching PWG DVDs. I don't think he was a big indie wrestling fan, unfortunately. He did do an indie show. Remember that? Remember when he like did a John Cena's dad
John
indie
Cena?
Show?
Yes.
I remember seeing that video, and that's just like, that's surreal. It's like 2012 or something.
Yeah, I do remember that.
He takes like an F5 from John Cena and Vince McMahon on an indie show.
Well, Brandon, I'm more so interested in some of your thoughts as not just somebody that wrestled for years on the independent scene, but also was directly involved with training. And if you're looking at it from the perspective, like number one, I'm all for independent talents having parts of an income subsidized and being able to earn more to learn a craft. I guess you the pessimistic side of you always has to be like, where, like, what is WWE ultimately looking for? Is this to foster a healthier independent wrestling community? Is this to directly fill up another pipeline that goes straight to the performance center? And what this overall is going to mean for their amount of claws they're getting in on independent talent. But I could see a lot of schools that are, if it's presented to you to have this relationship with WWE, many are going to jump at it. But I think like there should be that caution as well about protecting yourself and what are the pros and cons of this for talent and schools. And those might not all be in alignment either.
Yeah. It depends on what the details of the deal are and how much money it is and what the restrictions contractually are and what rights it gives WWE. But I can understand the skepticism given WWE's history, right? The 1980s is where we start, and WWF at the time competed with the territories and put a lot of the territories out of business, or at least expedited those territories going out of business. The one that people point to in more recent times is the relationships that WWE established in the UK just before the pandemic. And I guess I'm not really clear on what the issues are there. I guess the notion is that they established these relationships just like they did with companies in the 80s and you know, sort of elevated their talent and then took the talent that they wanted and thus taking the talent that they wanted away from those brands like, I guess, Progress and ICW. And those companies were left with less star power in the end. I think the UK scene has had a lot of its own issues that don't have anything to do with WWE, including the pandemic, including you know, all the allegations related to speaking out. But the US indie scene has had its own issues, I think, just since AEW has launched. Like, this is, to me, the US indie scene that we have now is sort of the indie scene that you have when you've got two pretty strong companies that are just properly identifying talent. And I think the bubble that we had with indie wrestling in the throughout the 2010s is largely due to the misidentification of talent and not identifying talent under the leadership of John Laurinaitis and Vince McMahon.
We're going to bring in our guest who is going to give his perspective of this, Mark Paulicell, who is the promoter at C4 Wrestling out of Ottawa, Ontario. He shared his thoughts on X and I thought outlined like a lot of these, everyone completely understanding. Agreed. Of both viewpoints and respectfully responded to him, and a great civil discourse as always comes out of this. So, dare we say we are going to jump onto that. Mark, you survived quite the day.
Hi, Mark.
On X. How are things in your chaotic world?
I'm sitting down for the first time today with you guys. But yeah, you guys go through this on a weekly basis with the feedback of your unbiased opinions. If you give a hint of any sort of critical analysis to something, I'm bought and paid for by Tony Khan. My bank account doesn't know that yet, but apparently I am. And I'm also very jealous, is what I've been told. And I was said no to in something I never knew existed. But what can you do?
I want to just read like an excerpt from this. And again, you can go to C4 Wrestling to read. It's a great thread. I would encourage people to check out. But the point of independent wrestling is for talent to discover themselves and develop themselves, to grow, to learn. If you claim to be an independent but are bound to a billion-dollar company, you're not an independent. If you're a young trainee, there is no fast track to the big leagues. I know when you're 19, 20, 21, etc., it may feel like it is a now or never type situation to make a career in wrestling. Don't rush yourself. Pride yourself on growing and traveling. And I'll just summarize at the end, because sometimes you may notice, Mark, on these threads, they don't make it through the entire thread to the end. These are my immediate feelings. Maybe there is more to come that will prove me wrong. But again, the talent I've seen succeed and reach that next level didn't achieve what they have because the path was an easy one to success. Make your own roads. To be clear, the point of these thoughts are that there is no one-size-fits-all approach to succeeding in pro wrestling. What works for some won't work for others. Convincing people that there is only one path is the problem. I think anyone that is going into this that is making like grand declarations of what this is going to mature into, like there are too many question marks attached to it. But right. The idea of this is all good or all bad, you kind of have to dismiss that because anyone, I think, looking at the track record has to enter one of these deals with a healthy dose of skepticism as well to understand like there is a value for WWE of why they are cultivating this program for their benefit.
Yeah, I a lot has been said in the last 24 hours since this came out, and it's very vague, and yeah. I feel it's very vague intentionally. Looking back over the last 40 years, I'm not gonna share my feelings on WWE one way or the other, but I don't know of a whole lot of selfless acts for the industry that WWE has ever done. And that's fine. They're a business. They're looking out for their own bottom line. And that's fine. I think that there is nothing wrong with an industry that I know, Brendan, you were saying that we were in an artificial sort of period during the late 2010s. I'd argue that we were in an artificial period from the mid 80s through the early 2000s, where prior to that, the territory system existed, people traveled, people grew, people learned, people became the ultimate version of themselves by trial and error. And I feel that, well, not a perfect system in the Indies today, because it's all over the place and there's good and bad. I think that it's similar in a way to the territories, where people are traveling every weekend. Those who really want it are traveling every weekend. Those are multiple 4 or 5 shots a week, depending on how far they're willing to go. And I think that it's just, like I said, I don't think there's a fast track, and I'm not saying that necessarily this is, but to young students starting out who are, say, 17 or 18 years old, if they say, oh, there's this WWE approved school that's 2 hours away, or this other school that's still got a good output within driving distance or whatever, they're going to go with the visions of, this is my entry into the WWE, is what I feel it is. And knowing a lot of younger talents, I don't blame them for that. But look at, I don't know. I think, jumping around here, at the end of the day, I feel that this is just another program they're doing. It's no different than or hiring directive that they're going through, which is no different than in the 2010s when you had to be 6'2", 230. You weren't going to be looked at. Then it was Black and Gold came along and signed up everybody who had ROH buzz or indie buzz. Then we came into the arms race when AEW was signed and just everybody was signed. And I think the indies have sort of bounced back post-pandemic since then to a degree. And I just don't want to, I think this will inevitably lead to AEW having to start something similar, inevitably leading to an arms race again of sorts, and just taking a lot of people off the table, not selfishly at all. I'm saying for their sake before they're ready. Brendan, Garcia was courted in 2019-2020 for NXT. Had he gone down there likely at that time, he would have been part of the cuts that came a few months later, and virtually everyone was sent packing. And that's not a statement on his talent, but say a kid as hungry and as good as Danny came along
and Dante went to, Rios, as I recall.
Yes, exactly. And they even copywrote the name.
Yes.
Say a kid as good as Danny was 4 years ago or 5 years ago got a taste of the business, had all the potential in the world, went to a WWE approved school, wasn't the top two picks that they had in mind for whatever reason, and then sent packing. And they're seen as a failure to some degree because they didn't fit what was needed.
I agree with a lot of what you're saying, Mark, but I feel ultimately it's like for a lot of these guys who are, you know, it's an incredibly tough road on the independents. And if this is flashed in front of you, no one's playing the long game on this. It's going to be something very, very enticing. And 100%. It's going to be very hard to dissuade people from.
I think something that does have to be figured out is what is being offered. Is it NXT UK? Here's 14 grand a year. You can't work anywhere we don't approve of.
Right.
Because that's not helping anybody. And as I said, it's a dangerous.
And just add, I've been told by at least one person that there's no restrictions. So we'll see if that lasts, but there's no restrictions on where
you can work. Remember when Samoa Joe was in NXT and he was allowed to work indies restriction free? How long did that last for? I'm just saying WWE says a lot of things, and that's fine. It's their business. But for 40 years, we have seen those things, and we have seen the ultimate direction where most of those things go. Maybe I'm completely out to lunch on this, and I am just this bitter early 40-year-old promoter who's mad I have to pay my talent now or something. I just think logically, which is a scary word for a lot of people, that is it's not going to be for the benefit of everybody. And I get that, why it's not supposed to be.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah.
Do you have any concern that – so one thing I've heard from people generally is that this might lead to a more homogenous wrestling style because people might just start to conform to – and we've seen sort of seen a track record of this throughout the developmental history of WWE. People might just start to conform their style to what they think or what they've been told WWE wants, and that leads to a more homogenous wrestling style in the indies, which really benefits from having a wide variety of kinds of wrestling.
I think talent benefits from having a wide variety of styles to learn from. And that's why I think traveling is so important to young talent. Getting international exposure experience is so important. There is no one style of wrestling. We've been told because of one company that blew up in the 80s that Northeastern American style was the style and anything else was Southern wrestling or whatever. The beautiful thing about indie wrestling is there is no house style. The people who will knock me for what comments I made were going off on indies being dangerous and setting each other on fire. And what these are people who've never watched indie wrestling. They've seen clips pop up on Twitter. They believe that WWE took everyone out of smoky bars with 200 people in them. And you're not going to win those people over. But I just – yeah. Learning and styles, having a house style, homogenized style is not for the benefit of anyone. Because again, if you're a 19-year-old kid and you enter that into one of those schools, I'm not saying you're not going to learn the fundamentals. I'm not saying you're not going to learn the basics. I'm not saying you're not going to get a good start. But if you are cut, you're going to have a whole lot harder of a time to adapt and grow outside of there, because you're going to be taught, well, that was the WWE approved and accredited method of learning. And that's a dangerous mindset, I think, because that's pushing that this is right. And in art, there is no right or wrong. And professional wrestling as an art, and independent wrestling, I have always loved, because it's such a melting pot of styles and a melting pot of personalities and people, and not trying to fit a certain bubble. And that's the other thing is what are these schools suddenly going to? And I know they're all just connected, five schools right now to people in WWE. Sure. But it's like if, again, going back 5 years, using Grapplers Anonymous as an example, Puff isn't getting into WWE. Like the look, Andy Williams, you're too old. Like these guys who are great talents and passionate individuals aren't going to fit the mold that I fear will also go back to, okay, this indie developmental idea didn't work. Let's go back. Everyone has to look like wrestlers. 6'1", 230, once again. Like, it's just, as I said, we've all been around enough to see these cycles of, okay, it's next in line. Okay, it's black and gold. Okay, it's we're not going to hire indie wrestlers. Okay, now we're going to sponsor indie wrestlers perhaps, which is a great idea in theory until the restrictions will start popping up inevitably. They can't lose. They can't work. They can't work anything streaming. They can't – like these things will come up. They 100% will come up. And I'm sure there's people watching this who are like, you're just paranoid and bitter. But looking to history, there's nothing indicating that it won't happen again.
So if we go with the theory, they're completely hands off. This is financial sponsorship of wrestlers. Okay, that's one potential avenue that comes out of this. As a promoter, what would be your concerns if one of these talents comes to you and states with this deal XYZ on a show, like what are the concerns you would have in terms of booking talent that may come with added caveats that you need to adhere to in terms of booking these talents?
Booking is managing a lot of different people always. Wherever you get people from, there's restrictions. I'm sure you guys are aware of restrictions for certain companies and what certain people have to do and what they can't do. And that's fine as long as you're aware of it.
Yeah, and we're under the impression that generally AEW talent can't lose on indie shows.
AEW can't. Occasionally TNA guys can't. MLW guys occasionally can't. It varies. And it's also a thing where one of those people might just be throwing that out there and I don't have the energy to argue with because I'm like, sure, guys, you can't lose this fake fight. But I think I think it's not for me, even like, okay, if it's a restriction on where they can or cannot be shown, if I can't stream your content, if I can't put it in the C4, as small as it is, but in that C4 library and IWTV, well, I need my content. I need to have what we put out there. Thank you for that. But I need to have the whole idea for me to help people grow is by having good matches available for people to watch and to get themselves out there a little more. I don't think logically, if it's just a sponsorship thing, I don't see suddenly the intelligent people out there saying, well, now my price is this. I just think that would be, they'd shoot themselves in the foot. That doesn't make sense.
Right.
Even wins or losses are being presented a certain way. I can work within those boundaries as long as I'm aware of them. For me, my biggest concern for this whole thing is what I tried to get through it in my post is nobody is fully formed when they start wrestling. It'll take you 5 years to find yourself. At least Kevin Owens was not Kevin Steen was not Kevin Owens 15 years ago. Finn Balor, Fergal Devitt wasn't Finn Balor. AJ Styles was AJ Styles 20 years ago. The Bucks weren't the Bucks when they were Generation Me. Like these things take time to find your confidence. You can be an amazingly gifted athlete, and we see that every week. But there's a confidence, which is that it factor, that is if you're in front of a crowd and it's not what you had planned for, you're able to think on your feet. You're able to go with the flow. You're able to have the confidence in the performer you are that it's not you're throwing off your game. And those things, it's not about a grind. It's not about paying your dues, kid. It's about learning by doing. It's the 10,000 hours thing. I keep going back. There's no for sure shortcut. And the other thing is when I said in that, if you're doing this for 5 years or 10 years and you spend that time from 18 to 28, if you've got talent and you're getting out there, you're traveling internationally and you're making a name for yourself, your value is much more than if you're 2 years in showing up at the Raw show, Raw tapings, and trying to get noticed. One is you knocking on their door. The other will be them knocking on your door. And you're not just going to get a tier whatever contract through the ID system. It's you'll be calling your shot. And if you're a talent who has that much faith in yourself, you'll be writing your own check at that point. I think I think this will undercut a lot of people's upward mobility, not just at prospect to WWE, but across the entire industry. And partially that's by design because they want to earmark certain talent for them. Again, I get it. But from a talent perspective, I understand the excitement and how hard it would be to say no. But if you have value, you will make that money back tenfold a little bit down the line.
I think part of this conversation is, look at what the Performance Center has done. And, you know, there's this perspective out there that the PC hasn't lived up to its hype. It hasn't produced the talent that it was supposed to produce. And I think part of what this will give WWE the opportunity to do, in theory, is to send talent that, you know, if you're looking at the PC and saying, okay, they've got people who are former college athletes, D1 college athletes, they're great athletes, but maybe just being in the performance center is not enough to give them the experience that they need to grow into great performers, and maybe they can be sent into the indies, approved indies, to get that experience. I think that's, at least at this point, at least that's what some people, even within WWE, are envisioning it as.
Sure, and I think also possibly the other day, this is going to be a way to dissolve the performance center. If you have 10 reputable schools across the country with a hub in Las Vegas or something, why do you need a warehouse in Orlando? And if we're talking about cost synergies, as I've heard many times spoken about on the show, if you're able to outsource 90% of that work,
right?
Why? Like, I don't see how they're not doing that. Yes, getting people out of there. I find it humorous at the same time, though. For years, we were told on the indies that no one's going to get better working indies. It's not the environment they need. Now it's, oh, we need you for reps. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, arguably, like that was the Vince McMahon, John Laurinaitis perspective. That was just wrong. And if we take it in good faith, right, this is the new Paul Levesque perspective, is that sure, the indies are really important, which is something that we heard him evolve into over the course of the late 2010s or so.
Pardon the pun.
Sure. And on that note, with Gabe and Evolve, how many of those people really ended up in WWE, even when they were under, when Evolve became under,
mm-hmm, WWE? Became kind of an informal developmental. And I think there were
but,
like,
but what I'm saying
highly
is,
under deals there.
Think Josh Briggs, Drew Gulak, Anthony Green was signed and then they let him go with the cuts, and now he's doing great in Noah. Mm-hmm. They're talking the right talk, but this is not the first time they've done that. And at the same time, looking at that Evolve roster, Darby Allin, Ethan Page, and others weren't picked up and found their voices elsewhere. And now Ethan Page is back in the fold. But I think this all goes back to, there is no one path. There is no one guaranteed path. And I trying to sell this as the surefire way to roster success is gonna, I think, be a rude awakening for a lot of people, because
how do you view what they did with the UK and the relationships that they made with, I guess it was Progress, ICW, and WXW? Do you think like that was a negative for that scene?
There was a lot of negatives going on with that scene, and it's hard to, it's like they sold people on something that for various reasons could not come to fruition. COVID obviously probably ruined a lot of their plans, but also NXT UK was in itself a very reactionary measure to counter the world of sport, a revival. So they do these things over the years that are they'll say the right things, but they're very reactionary, or they're very, again, not in a negative way, but it's self-serving. And
I think there is a defensive strategic advantage to this, whether it's
sure,
it's being explicitly planned or not, in that I think it sort of defends them against what has ultimately happened with AEW and the opportunities that New Japan capitalized on in the US and Ring of Honor for a time, in that if you sort of have your thumb on all these, you know, these promising indie talents, and you're already making deals with them, it becomes harder for somebody to make an upstart that comes to take some of your market share.
The thing is, no matter how hard they try, they can never control an industry. And that is what this comes down to. That is, okay, they sign 150 people to ID contracts across North America, let's say. Just throwing out that number, I have no basis in reality for that. Okay, but there still could be 20 or 30 or 40 other really great talents that are going to carve out something on their own and find success on their own. You can't control an industry, no matter how hard for 40 years one company has tried to control an industry. There's no way to do it. And yes, they're the Kleenex of professional wrestling. I get it. And that's what, just like UFC for MMA, TKO has these brands, and that's what it's about now. It's the biggest market footprint. But it's, I don't like, I'm really not paranoid or worried, but I sound very paranoid when I say it's hard to trust a company that they're doing this for the better of everyone, because they're not.
What's going to be most interesting is, I think, like, the first real test will be WrestleMania weekend next year, when in theory you're going to have talents under these deals, whatever the number is. And when you hear, like, the most lucrative weekend of the year for a lot of these talents, and instead of being able to take 8 bookings, it's, hey, we need you at Access today, and your overall deal is what covers this, and you can't go do Game Changer and then cross town and do this show. Like, that will be a very interesting weekend when you have some of those guys that are taking all these different bookings, and that would be a weekend that WWE wants to have these talents under a certain spotlight.
I think another thing that, like, people, there's this idea that they're going to get ahead of the next indie star by signing them at this stage. But again, Bryan Danielson wasn't Bryan Danielson when he was working in Memphis in 2002. The Motor City Machine Guns aren't main eventing, like, SmackDown last week and winning the tag titles in Madison Square Garden 20 years ago, even if they signed them at that point. There were warehouses filled with people after in Heartland and Memphis
OVW.
After buying out WCW, like, you can acquire all these things you want. That doesn't mean it's going to perform the way you want it to.
One more question for me, Mark, is, as you're around so many independent talents, and for years, like, a lot of the thought process is that so many of these performers, it's still, they grew up with WWE as the ultimate goal. Have you seen that shift in these last 5 years, that AEW is a more attainable option for some talents? Or do you still feel like that is going to pull on a lot of people when it comes to making these decisions, that WWE is still the be all end all, and now it's within grasp for me with one of these sure. deals coming their way?
Yeah, I think it's for anyone, even, like, AEW's only been around for 5 years, so it's hard. There hasn't been a generation raised on it yet.
Yeah,
that's WWE has generational audiences, and that's one of their strongest assets, right? Is that generational audience. So you have even talents who are 20 years old who've been watching for 10 years or whatever, as since they were kids. Yeah, WWE is the be all end all. I do believe that people are starting to see more opportunities in an AEW or elsewhere. And I whenever I talk to a young talent, it's WWE will always be there. It's not going anywhere. And likely AEW will be there for just as long. They're fine too right now. And it's there'll be these opportunities waiting for you. Just because you're 19 years old now, again, it feels like you got to do it now. You got to do it now or never. Spend 5 years or even 3 years just working on yourself and traveling and trying to make yourself a bigger asset. And yeah, to answer your question, I think there's some younger guys, like a guy like London Lightning, who, young kid, an Evil Uno and Stu Grayson student, has really started to break out locally, and AEW took a liking to him and used him a few times here and there. And I think that opened his eyes as another path that these young guys probably didn't see. And I'd sure love to see something like Dark return for a lot of these guys, as that really was an avenue for many indie talents to get in the doorway that way. But yeah, I've said it before, there's never been more opportunities to make a living as a professional wrestler than there are in 2024. You have AEW, WWE, TNA. All three of those are paying well. CMLL is on fire. There's opportunities in Japan. There's televised. There's stuff like even MLW. It's televised. You get an opportunity to get yourself out there. Just as a young talent, try exploring every option before locking yourself into something that could cut you at your knees down the road. Because WWE, he might not think much of you and keep you under this deal for however long this deal is, where other bookers or promoters could see something in you that they're not allowed to touch for however long because you're locked into this certain deal. Just be aware of what you're agreeing to as well, I think would be advice that I'd give.
Last thing, Mark, do let everyone know here how they can follow the work you're doing and where they can check out on IWTV, because Mark has been, it's no exaggeration, he has spent his adult life promoting independent wrestling, and C4, they always have a lot of buzz attached to their shows that happen pretty much on a monthly basis in Ottawa.
Basically, yeah, since 2007, November 29th, we're celebrating our 17th anniversary here in Ottawa. On c4wrestling.com, you can click get tickets or watch us on IWTV. We don't usually stream live. We'll put it on the Tuesday following just because there's so much weekly content on a Saturday night on the Indies. I'd rather give it 2 days and then let people see the show. And people are finding our stuff and enjoying our stuff. We've got a very talented roster. Like I mentioned, Grapplers Anonymous, there's several great talent out of your neck with Brendan who've really worked hard. And
using Young Jay Lee, right?
Young Jay Lee is amazing. Young Jay Lee.
He's one of the last trainees I worked with, yeah.
Yeah, he's such a good kid. And yeah, but yeah, there's a good crop out of there. Even though it wasn't a WWE accredited learning institute, it's still very good.
Well, Mark, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
I imagine there's a lot of promoters and trainers out there that probably have a lot of similar thoughts. And I don't know how many of them maybe want to speak openly about it, because there's a lot at stake here for people. And I think that it's very important that, you know, this, like, history is usually a guide for the future, and it's worth having healthy skepticism. But I'm sure everyone will agree unanimously with our discussion today. So thank you so much for joining us, Mark.
Thanks, guys.
All the best. Thanks,
Mark. You too. Take care.
All right. Mark Policell joining us, folks. So a big thank you to him for joining us. I think it's going to be, you know, it's one of like so many questions that I have attached to this deal. And that's what we're left with, is many, many questions. And hopefully we will set out to answer those in the coming weeks. But if you are a WWE performer on the roster, like, this is a very, you know, it's a self-involved industry where you naturally look at yourself. And if you are a performer that is seeing, you know, not an insignificant amount that is now being allocated to the grassroots level of wrestling, and still I'm paying for my hotel, I'm still paying for my car. Like, certainly if you are a WWE performer, you can look at, maybe we can make some advancements here at this stage of the game where these performers, I mean, it's still wild to me. Like, whenever those clips come up of Bayley on...
Yes.
FS1 a few years ago, and I feel there was another one recently.
It's just bringing up at your next CBA negotiation.
You know what? It slipped the agenda at the last time they sat down for their last collective bargaining agreement to talk about the percentage they'll get for the Netflix deal. But again, it's like it brings up all of these interesting questions. And again, we will see what happens. I will say this: for this many months into the WWE TNA crossover, like, what we have seen, number one, is that we've seen NXT talent go over there. We've seen them lose. We've seen TNA benefit from this. Like, their attendance, like, they did 3,000 people this past weekend at Bound for Glory. I would label this so far, like, this has turned out well for...
It's been a benefit for TNA.
It has been a benefit for TNA. I think it's been very clear.
They've been working with Noah in Japan.
They've worked with Noah. They're sending Shinsuke Nakamura back there. I mean, it certainly remains to be seen. But I think anyone going into this with either, as we stated with Mark, like, to go in this, like, this is can't miss, this is completely positive, or this is going to be the death. I think of those extremes you have to eliminate.
What has Noah benefited more from, working with WWE or working with Kijimoto?
Oh, geez. I mean, with Kijimoto, I mean, entertaining from the outside to watch this man operate. But yes, it has been... Yeah, the Abima relationship has really brought all those parties together. But
let's have the quick PC discussion. Is this an admission of the failure of the WWE Performance Center, which launched in July 2013?
I think it's definitely an about face of where we were several years ago, when it felt as though, like, we're not cutting off the independent scene, but it's like, you're going to have to be truly special for us to invest in you. We want to go through this NIL program. And I think it is an understanding that at the very least, the NIL program is not going to be sufficient enough for replenishing our recruits.
But they have a warehouse, and they have all of the resources, both monetarily, and they have all of the legends there to train people. Why has the performance center's output been disappointing? And if it has, why?
Well, let's look at least in the modern times of, like, we're not going to go back to, like, you know, Florida Championship Wrestling era, but of the recent years, like, what and who have been the success stories out of the Performance Center, where basically day oneers have come in and ascended? I would place Bianca Belair in that class. I would place a Braun Breaker in that class. Like, those to me would be your standouts of the last 5 years that can be claimed as
Williams in there.
Trick Williams, I would add in as well on top of that. I know Braun Breaker did, like, under 10 matches, I think, before he got to the Performance Center. So I consider him a Performance Center product. And perhaps you're looking at, hey, if in a five-year span, if we get a Bianca Belair, a Braun Breaker, and a Trick Williams, who I think are all people, could you make the argument that in the next, Bianca Belair has technically headlined a WrestleMania. A Braun Breaker and a Trick Williams headlining WrestleMania, is that potential in the next 5 to 10 years? I think definitely. So what is the level of success needed to qualify this enormous investment as a success if you get 3 to 5 of those performers that could be main event level performers at a WrestleMania level over the course of
and just to throw some other names out there, and there's caveats we could put with these two, but Braun Strowman, Baron Corbin, let's see here, Liv Morgan, in terms of people who are, and I think there's these other cases of people who quickly were used on the main roster, even in really high profile spots, like Ronda Rousey, who's, I think she might have had some rehearsals at the Performance Center. I don't know if she was training.
One or two, as she would outline in her book, yeah. Or 30.
I mean, look at some of the celebrities, like Bad Bunny suddenly, I'm not saying that they were products of the PC. What I'm saying is almost the opposite, in that they were quickly pretty good, and I'm sure there's a lot of rehearsal. And I'm sure in the case, Logan Paul is the next one I want to bring up, as somebody who's obviously a gifted athlete, as we see in his boxing career, but somebody who's just suddenly able to be a really good wrestler, and maybe that's just athletic gifts plus a lot of rehearsal time.
I think it's the argument of the people that come in. If you have, number one, I think athletic pedigree is still very, very high on their list of requirements. Number two is having a more than cursory love for this industry, that it helps that you're a fan, like a Bad Bunny or someone that at least understands the industry. And I think that is the intangible, that if we can get those together in concert with our team, we can produce a Logan Paul to do 6 to 7 matches per year. That obviously his athletic skill sets him apart, and he has clearly an aptitude for this and beyond just a cursory interest in professional wrestling. And the idea meaning that I'm sure there are plenty of NIL talents that they have signed that are looking at this as an opportunity, but not really understanding what they are getting into. You go directly to the independents, and if you're somebody that is coming up to the independent system, there's going to be a much better hit rate.
It tells you something about that person's passion, I would say.
That has more than not been a lifelong fan.
Offered a contract by WWE.
And understands what they are getting into, as opposed to a college athlete that has come up in a totally different system than the independent professional wrestling scene, which are very, very different.
As I was saying to you earlier today, on one hand, it's hard. I look at the Performance Center, and they've got all the resources in the world. And I've had some experience training people, and we've had a few people who names people actually recognize now, including Daniel Garcia, Kevin Blackwood, Young Jay Lee,
Daniel Rios for
Dante Rios.
Who
I, along with others, we trained. So it does. Considering that, I look at the Performance Center and all the resources and time that they've had, they should be doing better than they are, I think. And I don't know why, without being there and experiencing what that culture is like, but you would think that you have people whose jobs it is. I trained people who had part-time jobs, you know, jobs and went to school and stuff, but it's like they're living there in Florida and they're being paid a full-time living to just do this. It's hard for me to wrap my head around why they haven't been able to produce more good wrestlers. But it's hard to know without being there. Part of it is the fact that we're in this weird wrestling industry today where there isn't, you know, people aren't on the road 6 or 7 days a week, brother, up and down the roads, wrestling all the time. There are some Florida house shows and they've cut back on those. And maybe part of this new strategy is not just the funnel up into WWE, but the funnel coming out of WWE of people who need experience that the PC can't give them. And I am suspicious that there's like a sort of a snobbishness towards wrestling that is not WWE and rejecting ideas and styles and philosophies of wrestling that are not WWE approved.
You're going to have to cite your sources to make such a grand statement like
this.
That
is just an opinion. This is
the last
just
5 years. I've not seen any evidence of this, that WWE presentation of pro wrestling would be completely rejected.
And I think that mentality emanates mainly from Vince McMahon, who is now gone. And I think Paul Levesque is much more open to different kinds of wrestling. That being said, though, that is still a culture that gets left behind. And I think there are some habits and people who earnestly have a mindset that's kind of like that who are still there. But yeah, I think you become a good wrestler by being exposed a lot of times to a lot of different wrestling styles and being exposed to people who are, you know, who have something to show you and who are more experienced than you. And that may not just be available in Orlando in the Performance Center. It may be more available on the indies, in Pro Wrestling NOAA. Maybe they'll make a relationship with AAA, who seems to be not so much affiliated with WWE. We do have a Triple Mania gate. Did you see that come in?
I did. I actually forwarded this over to our good friend, the Cubs fan.
Oh, good. I thought about
for his records,
too,
yes.
Just so you know.
This was the third of three Triple Mania events that went down August 17th.
This is an exclusive, by the way. Exclusive. Exclusive details in this video title. Here's the exclusive detail.
From August the 17th of this past summer, 18,986 tickets sold by AAA for Triple Mania. A gross of $420,000, $420,561 for Triple Mania,
which for context is very close to the number that Jason Cruz got for the gate for Wrestle Dream. So this is much lower ticket price for AAA, much higher attendance.
Yeah, the average ticket sold was $22.15 for Triple Mania, who are not at the mercy of dynamic pricing that is sending the current get-in price, according to TickPick, the two-day pass for WrestleMania next April, get-in price currently $1,017 for two nights.
Is that what it is now? It was I saw 800, I saw 950.
It's fluctuated, but as of right now, as I'm looking here, $1,017. Also popping up here is the ability to buy individual nights. On at least here, I would imagine this is all secondary market ticket selling. But certainly over the last week, certainly there has been great apprehension from fans to escalating WWE ticket prices. But it seems that it's hit a new zenith with these WrestleMania tickets. And folks, this is here to stay. And this is their biggest event of the year, save for really the biggest event of the year is this Saturday for WWE from a pure.
I can find some single tickets for $900 and $950. That's only when you change it to one ticket if you want to sit by yourself.
And that's for both nights, correct?
Correct. So this is giving you a ticket for both nights. Mm-hmm. So cut that in half if you want to think about it per night.
And these are minus fees as well.
Which, right. Yeah. They're going to hit you with those fees.
Man, I just bought Toronto Raptor tickets the other night. And man, yeah. Fees for that, for just a throwaway game against the Lakers. I was like, my God. Yeah, everyone. It's going to be super expensive to be an in-attendance occupier of two nights of WrestleMania. And this is an Allegiant Stadium. What, like, roughly, I think 55,000 is what it's been scaled for past wrestling shows, I think, off the top of my head. Very possible they could sell out both of these shows, given the demand for these tickets, and I think it is without question that this is going to be the highest grossing wrestling events in history, which you went through this past Sunday.
Yeah, it really depends. As far as the volume of tickets that they'll be able to sell here, it really depends on what the configuration is, which I'm sure it's not finalized, but they have a rough idea because they put out a CD map here. But I would rule of thumb, 55,000 for a stadium show is roughly what I think the rough minimum is, and that's about the number of tickets that they sold for WrestleMania each night last year.
And we talked about this last week. We didn't have much time at the end of the show, but just to go over it. So last week, Endeavor made there was an acquisition by TKO from Endeavor of the IMG agency, PBR, and the On Location ticket service. And I understand there was also, a college, there was like a basketball league tied into this. I have to.
Well, I'm not aware of that.
Anyway, for sure, those three, I will double check on the others. But Wall Street did not respond very well to this, as they saw the stock was trading at around $126. And then this announcement was made. Currently, as of Wednesday afternoon, it's trading at just over $116. And here is a friend of the show, Brandon Ross, on the Lightshed Partners podcast, talking about how the street reacted to this news, and as well, why there could be some optimism for a deal that's coming down in early 2025.
The bottom line is investors didn't like Endeavor because they didn't understand.
As a public company.
As a public company. Yes, because they didn't understand a lot of the assets. There were no KPIs attached to them, and they didn't know how to model it. They liked TKO because it was a very simple story with assets that they understood, with a growth trajectory that was very obvious, and free cash flow that was very obvious. Now you muddied it up a little bit. So that's a bad news. That's why the stock sold off today. Sure. Now, when we're talking 2, 3, 4, 5 months down the road, when the UFC deal is probably done and announced, if that is a good deal, the stock's going to go up a lot from here. If it is a bad deal, the stock's going to go down from here. And everything that was done today is going to look like a relative pimple and be forgotten about. So if you think the UFC deal is going to be good, you probably want to use this sell-off as a buying opportunity, is my guess.
There's Brandon Ross. So this story, a pimple potentially for TKO.
I saw another, I saw a AWB investor also tweet that this tells you that they're confident that the insiders, the people who run the company, are confident that the UFC deal, or confident generally in the future of the company, and that would include most of all in the immediate future, the UFC deal. But part of this is that Mark Shapiro, I believe on the previous earnings call, was asked, are you going to put PBR in here or anything else? And he said, no, we're not going to pollute
the story.
What's that?
Pollute the story, because it's a clean story. TKO.
Right. Which means this is a really clear way to kind of invest in sports rights fees, right? If you're really bullish and optimistic about the sports rights market for these broadcast rights, here's two properties whose future is really closely tied to that. And now you're putting PBR, which also is, but you're also putting in IMG, which is a talent agency that negotiates for sports rights and represents a lot of athletes. And then also the On Location business, which is a travel packages business basically. And which are these companies just have lower profitability margins than WB and TKO do.
Now, unlike the Ring Boy suit, this story, I imagine, will get plenty of questions on the call next week.
The most important thing in life is, you know, when your moral hierarchy, it's the less fortunate are down here, and it's shareholder value on top.
Yeah. Next week's going to be very interesting because we should mention this. The earnings report and call are taking place next Wednesday. The call is in the evening, so we are going to delay our show till Thursday of next week. I think as well, like the results, we probably won't have a clear winner from the election on Tuesday, but that could very well be something of interest to on the call as well. I don't know necessarily, but could be a very interesting call coming the day after the
in what way election. Like antitrust,
plenty of it, yeah, of
labor issues,
concerns about potential labor issues, potential like what a Republican administration means for a company like TKO that's been very attached to this administration. I mean, the larger question to me is what that could mean for Vince McMahon, seriously, to have a in terms of a federal investigation.
I don't think he can be pardoned. I don't think pardons can cure him of his civil lawsuit issues, but maybe
not the civil one, but yes. Federal investigation.
Yes.
Let's maybe not get into all of this this late in the show. All right. That is all.
We have a couple questions. We have a couple questions on the board here. Jake from the Windy City says, I don't think WWE ID is great news for AEW as well. They haven't done that much homegrown talent development, in my opinion, outside of the Nightmare Factory,
which is now a WWE ID school. Listen, AEW, this is a measure that I don't think you can just roll over and not have some kind of response to this, because ultimately it's constant replenishing of talent. And like, if you are AEW, does this inform you of a new strategy when it comes to cultivating your own talent at the independent level? Because quite frankly, this is going to leave you without access to a lot of talent when WWE is putting these resources into identifying those talents very early in their career. So I do think there needs to be some response to this. And the larger effect is, like, today we have 5 schools attached to this. In 2 years from now, like, that number could be 10x. And if you're talking about all the main wrestling schools that are attached to this, that's absolutely going to inform the way these performers are being trained, of where they are being directed toward. Like perhaps that is a sky is falling outlook to this, but you naturally have to be looking at like where the spread of this is going to happen and the amount of schools that WWE is going to attempt to bring under this system.
One defensive strategy, I guess they could employ, is offer the WWE ID indie wrestlers big money to come in and like be squashed in handicap matches against like Wardlow or something. There's a creative idea for Wardlow too. I think, you know, AEW's talent development has basically been to scout the indies, especially early on, and to sign people. What if I told you that there was a major wrestling company that formed a relationship with one of the biggest international companies that's sort of on the decline and struggling, and they've, you know, this major wrestling company formed a relationship with this international company, and then, you know, a couple years into that relationship, signed their top 2 stars and took their top 2 stars away from them?
Talking theoretical here. No, I mean, you can definitely look at New Japan being the B side of that relationship and what the benefit versus the risk is. And that's what you are going to get in these relationships, is that for AEW, there's built in advantages to having that pipeline with New Japan. On New Japan's side, like, yeah, you have access to talent several times a year and you get to, you know, partake in this Forbidden Door event each year. But same time, yeah, to that measure, like, you have lost your franchise star that you spent a decade building the entire company around. There's definitely like detrimental effects to that partnership that New Japan has to assess, like, do the positives outweigh the negatives?
I guess New Japan calculates that it's, you know, it's a relationship that's working out well enough for them. I would say it's pretty clear that AEW has gotten the better version of that. But it very much, you know, if this was WWE, I hate to say it, but if this was WWE, I mean, people would be sounding the alarm. This is exactly what we're talking about today on a much larger scale, I would say, in terms of it is. I mean, yes, there's Naito and there's Tanahashi, but they're on the back end of their careers, to say the least. And you got Ospreay, who's coming up here, who's you know, in a position to be, you know, your main eventer for a number of years to come. And Okada, as you said, is a major star that they built up. And you introduce them to your audience, just like in the 1980s, you introduced them to your audience on TV, made sure they knew who they were, and then you signed them. But it's, you know, but AEW doesn't have that track record of being a predatory major company, and they are a much, much smaller company than WWE.
We've also got, they have announced Kenny Omega is going to be at Power Struggle on Monday and appearing there. You would think that that sets up something for him in a New Japan ring as well. Like, these are the things that you're going to balance. You know, for all the talk, like TNA, again, I think they've benefited a lot from this relationship with NXT, but it's not as though NXT is sending their premium talent to work in TNA. It's like this past week, like Bound for Glory had Wendy Chu and Brinley Reese, but there is still a benefit from that. And these are all the things that you have to weigh.
There's clearly the philosophy, and I see it in a number of ways from WWE, and that they want to use any other wrestling company in the United States. They want to use NXT as the comparison point, whether it's comparing ratings, which have become quite comparable with Dynamite and NXT. But even at first, you know, they wanted to, there's a, you know, sort of a message of, you know, they're just competing with our developmental league. And you're not going to see Roman Reigns show up on in TNA or something like that. Certainly. It's, you know, they want to, you know, that's the comparison point, is that these other US companies are comparable to our minor league. Because they are minor league.
Thanks for the question, Jake. We appreciate it. Yes.
And we also had, this was addressed to Mark, who's now gone, but do wrestlers think bigger picture outside of their own bubble, for lack of a better term? Do they think about all aspects of the industry or just about them? I think what this question is getting at, I guess I could tell you, I haven't been involved in any wrestling since 2021, but in my experience, independent wrestlers, and this probably goes for wrestlers in general, the majority of them don't have like a close handle on the inner workings of the industry. They know how to perform, and you know they're really good at doing all the things that are involved in being a performer, and not just the stuff that happens on screen. But I think that's a really important thing for people to understand the lay of the land and what's happening here, and that's a valuable thing for a wrestler to have, I think, is to understand the machinations of what's going on, what's W's motivation here.
And I'll also state that for a lot of these talents that we're probably going to be hearing attached to these deals, like, we are talking about like 20, 21 year olds in a lot of these different cases. Okay. It's like, do the math of like these people that were not even born by the time this was a post WCW, post ECW industry. And you know, you're talking about the idea of getting booked a handful of times a month, and suddenly an envelope comes with the WWE logo on it. Like, that carries a lot of weight with people, and you're
also getting a press credential.
No, that too. Some people also dream of that happening. But it's, you know, and you're going to pay me this amount that is going to be, you know, today, given what I'm making out of the industry, and you're telling me you're going to add a few zeros to this. It's extremely, it's extremely enticing. And for some, it may turn out to be a total success story. There are going to be success stories that come out of this, but it's also weighing, like, by saying yes to this deal, what am I also quietly saying no to? Like, what are going to be restrictions? What are going to be downsides to this? It's weighing it. And unfortunately, you are going to have to wait for evidence to see what these mature into and whether these are, you know, what this is cracked up to be and the benefits and negatives of it all. But
yeah, I remember when I was in the military, there was something that they taught us in some class about warning against being in awe of rank. That is, like, if somebody outranks you and they ask you to do something, that doesn't make it right to do necessarily. So don't be in awe of rank. And I think that's what happens a lot. I think that's what WWE benefits a lot from, is people see that logo, or they know that something or someone is associated with WWE, and it foregoes some critical thought.
On that note, we are going to bid everyone a farewell. It's been a packed edition of Pollock and Thurston. So next week, we're back on Thursday. So we will cover the earnings call. And if we have some time, we're also going to go over some of the Observer Hall of Fame candidates next week, as the deadline is looming. Will you be voting this year, Brandon?
Yes, I've basically got my ballot done.
Okay. I have to sit down and do my ballot, but I'll do that by next week. So that's coming up next Thursday, same time, 1 p.m. Eastern time. This coming weekend, we have got myself and Wei Ting. We will be doing a show on Saturday after Crown Jewel, and Sunday, Brandon has a free edition of WrestleNomics Radio happening at the WrestleNomics YouTube channel that everyone can check out at 11 a.m. Eastern time.
That's right.
All right.
Patreon.com/WrestleNomics.
Yes. Brandon will make sense of all the week's problems for you this Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern. Thank you to everyone for tuning in. And that concludes Pollock and Thurston. Big thank you to Mark Polisell for joining us and you as well.
Trump-endorsed MAGA extremist Bernie Moreno says he wants to move Ohio forward. He wants to make America great again. For whom? For people of color? For black people? Nah. Moreno is just looking out for himself and his white supremacist MAGA buddies. He doesn't believe in multicultural America and equality for all. Moreno was not for us and will never look out for us. We must re-elect Sherrod Brown, who's a champion for our community and all Ohioans. Vote for Sherrod Brown, November 5th.
Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.